Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts. Getting ready for a short road trip. We're heading to Duluth, Minnesota on the shores of Lake Superior. After vowing to cover the governor's race in Minnesota, I am off to the first of two state mainline political party conventions in the land of 10,000 lakes. First up, the state Republican convention in Duluth, and I really don't want to go. We're going to talk a little bit about that and about Minnesota history in podcast 727. Well, I think we can safely say that it is summer in Minnesota. It's hot. The bugs are starting to come out. You can start to hear them in the evening, and it's wonderful. I think this is the best part of the year. You know, it's still light at 10 o'clock at night, and we have a lot of heat ahead of us. And if you haven't had your air conditioning checked by Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul for home or business, you should do it. Because when it comes to keeping all these systems running right, especially these days at home or your business, when you have plumbing or heating problems or air conditioning problems, you want Ryan Plumbing and Heating because they have reliable service. I'll give you a number in a second. You can also find them at ryanplumbing.com online. But people still have plumbing problems during the summer. Plumbing problems, you know, usually it's a winter thing because pipes burst and there's issues. But if you have issues in your house that you think could be issues come next winter, this is a good time to get that stuff addressed. If you are putting in a garage, you might want to think about in-floor heating. If you're redoing the basement, you might want to think about in-floor heating. If you're putting on additions, new bathrooms, stuff like that, don't forget about Ryan Plumbing and Heating because they can help you get it done and get it done right. 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They go back four generations in Frogtown and St. Paul, and they go metro-wide from St. Paul. I always like to say, so from Burnsville to St. Louis Park to Minnetonka to Invergrove, Ryan Plumbing can be there. Ask Ryan about improving the efficiency of your heating systems for home or business if they come out to check the AC or to talk to you about some of this other stuff. This is a really good time to do this stuff because we don't, you know, this is the time to make hay, right? Summer, because we know that eventually winter is going to come back, and I don't even want to think about that. We just got over winter literally a month ago. We don't need to be thinking about that anymore. So don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, online at ryanplumbing.com. Let me grab a sip of my coffee. Well, it is the gloom of dusk, and I am down in the broadcast bunker. I've got the window open, very light breeze out there. You'll be able to hear the planes coming and going. And I did that because I can always hear the planes at my headphones, and it bothers me, and so I open the window so you kind of can hear what's going on outside. So yeah, I am unsure about this convention podcast idea. I'm not the only one. I've talked to delegates this week when it comes to the Republican convention that don't even want to go. But I think I have an angle because I've been thinking about this all day, and I wanted to do a podcast to set up the travel podcast that I'll be doing as I head up to Duluth for the convention this weekend. And I think I have an angle because I'm kind of a recent convert to kind of being in awe of Minnesota history. And I'll tell you why, because I really didn't have any, I'm from Chicago, I really didn't have much of an interest in Minnesota history. Minnesota is one of these states where you kind of have to be a native to kind of have an affinity for the state. And what's funny about it is I've been here for 25 years, long time, you know, at various different times moving back and forth into the state. And I never really got into Minnesota politics. And I don't really know why, except that I think that I didn't really understand it. It's kind of easy to understand Illinois politics because it's the city of Chicago and the rest of the state, you know, which usually is run by Chicago anyway. So if you come from Chicago, you kind of understand politics a little bit differently. And I've lived in Virginia and Pennsylvania and, you know, all over the country in various places doing radio. But I wanted to kind of do a podcast to set this up and talk about states. Because usually when it comes to political coverage, we don't talk about people don't really get plugged into elections unless it's a presidential election. And the midterm elections, as I have said on a couple of different podcasts, are really, really important. In Minnesota, it's an important election because we have two Senate seats up because of the resignation of Al Franken. We have a governor up. We have state races. And we also have, the congressional districts. So Minnesota politics is unique. And I'm going to talk about the Minnesota caucus system and the basic political unit system a little bit. But I want to start by reaffirming the state as a basic political unit in the United States. I've been to many of the 50 U.S. states, certainly almost all of the continental United States states. I haven't been to Alaska or Hawaii yet. And certainly since the Civil War and the development of the West in the latter part of the 1800s and early part of the 1900s, people have thought of the United States as a picture of the continental United States, North America, since the Civil War. That was when these United States became the United States. And we have largely forgotten since then that the states remain powerful entities retaining unenumerated powers, the powers the Constitution doesn't expressly reserve to the federal government, specifically in Article 1, Section 8. But because of the 10th Amendment, all the unenumerated powers are reserved to the states or the people, respectively. Now, in general, states are responsible for running elections. So state legislatures decide how and when and what to do with elections. But there have been federal interventions in how the states run their elections. It's not something that's unconstitutional, by the way. It's part of the Constitution. A good example is the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Probably the biggest intervention in the way states do things would have been the 15th Amendment after the Civil War. And that's controversial, of course. Every state is slightly different, but what's interesting is we don't think of that because we think of them as being mostly the same. And when you travel, especially if you get off the interstates, which have really only been around since the 1950s, you begin to get a sense for the differences in the way states were settled, in the way states developed their law about business and developed their law about transit and transportation and tax law and everything else, especially when it comes to election law. The thing is, political scientists and campaign managers and stuff, the differences in the states, especially when it pertains to election law, can really be something that loom large. I personally am struck again and again by the sheer physical size of the United States, and especially the size of the individual states. When I covered the presidential primaries in Iowa, you can get around Iowa. It's a big state, but there's no mountains, there's no beaches, there's nothing in the way. So you are able to negotiate these agricultural highways to get from point A to point B, and you can get across the state back and forth pretty easily. And most of the events for the presidential primaries are held around Des Moines. So if you're in Cedar Rapids or Des Moines or around that area, you can pretty much get to where you need to go. So everyone goes from Iowa to New England, which is New Hampshire, which is a pretty small northeastern state. And then we all go down to South Carolina, which is gigantic. So after about the third day of going from Columbia to Myrtle Beach or Charleston, you're exhausted just driving. And so covering the presidential primary in South Carolina, which I think is the third primary usually every election year, you're exhausted because you spend all the time driving or flying from these different locations, Columbia, Myrtle Beach, the southern beaches in South Carolina, and of course, Charleston. So there's all these different cities. So South Carolina is the first state where you see the mountain part of the state and the beach part of the state, and you see the physical size of these states and the physical differences of the individual states. And there isn't enough time in this podcast to talk about the differences in all the states. It would be hours long. You could write books about it. People have. It's fascinating, especially when you're traveling to see the different things. If you listen to my travel podcast, you know that I went to Ohio last year, and it's so amazing to me that you go from mining towns to towns that are focused on agriculture or towns that are really successful because of crossroads and things like that. And I don't know if I mentioned at the outset, I am a recent convert to the wonder of Minnesota. And I think you have to be a Minnesota native to really understand Minnesota and especially Minnesota politics, because it is described as quirky. Yes, you could say that all the states have quirky politics, especially the big states. And Minnesota is a very large state in similar, you know, similar to Wisconsin or similar to Illinois, in the sense that one part of the state is completely different from another part of the state. So the southern part of Minnesota is completely different from the northern part of Minnesota, especially when it comes to the Northeast versus the Southwest, Minneapolis and St. Paul versus Duluth and Virginia and Hibbing and Eveleth and on up to Ely, or Cook County, Minnesota, which is way west up by International Falls. So this is a very diverse state with a really interesting and rich history, which is one of the reasons I've developed a pretty high degree of appreciation for Minnesota over the years. Because when I met my Western historians who live in Deadwood, Brad and his wife Lori, you know, they're really into history of the West. A lot of the history that we see as paradigms of the West were really stories that happened in Minnesota. And Brad was very, you know, excited about pointing out to me that the most bloody Indian settler battle in the United States took place in the 1860s in New Ulm, where the Indians tried to take over and burn the town, and the defenders of the town, the people who lived in New Ulm, were all German. And they did not speak English. And of course, there was no army because the army was otherwise occupied in the Civil War. And I didn't even know about this. We all know about Little House on the Prairie, but when you go and you go to you know, the town that she's from, and you go to that little museum, which isn't that great, but they have some really cool stuff in there, you begin to see how difficult it was for people to come out here. So Minnesota was the frontier. Minnesota is as much a Western state, really, as any of the Western states. And a lot of the stuff that we see in movies that happen supposedly in Montana or Arizona or Wyoming happened here long before it happened in those places. So that's one of the cool things about Minnesota. The other thing about Minnesota is it has a very rich political history, which is quirky, and I'm going to talk about that because it has to do with this convention. So yeah, going to Duluth for the first official big time state convention. This one for the Republicans. Lots of rancor in the Republican ranks right now because the state party convention is supposed to endorse candidates, especially for governor. Meanwhile, on Friday night, June 1st, just as the fun starts in Duluth, former Governor Tim Pawlenty and all the rich donors are going to be meeting at the Stuffy and Clubby Minneapolis Club in Minneapolis to raise money for the former governor's 2018 campaign to get his old job back. And this has become very controversial with the delegates to the Minnesota GOP state convention in Duluth this week. And what this means is all the money is going to be at the Minneapolis Club in Minneapolis. All the usual suspects and the Republican Party reptiles, the delegates and the hangers-on and so forth are going to be in Duluth, where it supposedly is 48 degrees. It's one of the reasons I don't go to the northern part of the state very often, because it's too damn cold up there for me. But anyway, Pawlenty has turned the headless horseman. That's what I refer to all the people who are essentially, they come out of the woods to work for these really centrist moderate Republican campaigns who are all, and they're always funded by the rich guys from the western suburbs of Minneapolis and the Tony rich suburbs of St. Paul. And what they're trying to do is supposedly fight for a non-endorsement at the convention, because Pawlenty's rival at this point, Hennepin County Commissioner Jeff Johnson, is fighting for an endorsement. Obviously, there's other candidates up there for governor. But Johnson's probably the front runner when it comes to the delegates at the convention. And because Pawlenty plans to primary the commissioner this summer for the mantle of state Republican gubernatorial candidate, if he could succeed in getting a no endorsement, well, then it just makes him look so much the better. Pawlenty, in his bizarre promotional materials, politely refers to Johnson as a potential three-time loser. And his idea is that he got in the race, at least to hear some tell it. This is basically his version. He got in the race because the Republican Party didn't have the organization or the money to run its own candidate. He offered himself up to them first if they could come up with the money. And that didn't work. So then to make their guy look good, the headless horseman are going to go up to the convention to be pushing for non-endorsement in favor of the primary. And so the big issue at this convention is this whole fight between people who favor the primary system versus people who favor the so-called caucus system in Minnesota. And finding out where the caucus system came from, even finding out the origin of the basic political unit in Minnesota, which is the Senate district, there's something like 67 Senate districts, and I've been told that there are something like 110 BPOUs. I don't know if that's true because I didn't count them. There's a map somewhere, but trying to cobble together all this information is very, very hard. Here is one entry from One History of Minnesota Politics, which kind of tells you where I'm going to go with this podcast. The political environment emerged from the traditions. The political environment in Minnesota emerged from the traditions of the original New Englanders who brought their town meeting form of government to this new frontier. That foundation was reinforced by the Scandinavian and German immigrants with their ambition and high regard for education. Government has always been widely accepted as the legitimate means for public decision making in Minnesota, and business has played an important role as strong participants in public decisions. Minnesota's political system was based on caucuses from its inception in 1858, although caucuses per se then were and are described by later historians as smoke-filled rooms, not really a caucus system that favors the so-called grassroots to allow individual citizens to influence the political process. So that's the best I can get to. As far as the BPOU itself, the Senate districts, those are defined by the state constitution and the German and Scandinavian immigrants came to Minnesota during the latter part of the 1800s. So at first it was New Yorkers and New Englanders that were here. So this is where this sort of small town government approach, this town hall kind of government approach comes from. The thing that's really interesting about Minnesota is that this is also the cradle of populism and the kind of midwife to socialism in the United States. And, you know, if you look at national politics from the end of the 1800s through the 1920s, you had the Industrial Revolution in full, you know, swing, and it hurt farmers and union laborers. And in Minnesota, farmers and union laborers got together to fight the big banks in Minneapolis and St. Paul and the railroads. And this is really where this sort of populist little guy agriculture and labor culture kind of got together. You combine all that with the cooperative town hall, you know, idea where education and business and farmers all work together, and you can understand the political psyche of the state. Now, there are different regions in the state, and not all regions are like that. But when socialism as a political concept was very popular in rural parts of Minnesota and the upper Midwest, including North and South Dakota, Iowa, and Wisconsin, out of that came this progressive idea. Minnesota politics has always been progressive. Now, for a while, in the early part of the 1900s, the state did away with these caucuses, but they were back after World War I, established in 1922. What's a caucus? A caucus is, you know, a legally constituted political gathering. The Democrats have their caucuses, the Republicans have their caucuses, and the caucuses invite people in to sit down and discuss issues, and at the final step, vote on potential candidates. Now, in our caucuses in Minnesota, we have what's called a straw poll. The whole idea of the straw poll is to pull people in to vote for presidential candidates in a straw poll, but that happens at the end of the caucuses. And the real purpose of the caucus is to find people to participate in the BPOU processes, to become delegates, and to run for office at the basic political unit level so that these organizations are replenished from the ranks of the population. Now, suddenly caucuses are under fire again as too unwieldy because, surprisingly enough, and God forbid, too many people showed up to vote in the presidential straw polls last year, and they demanded that they be able to vote right away because they didn't understand what a caucus was. And rather than tell everyone to shut up and sit down and explain what a caucus process is, a lot of these caucuses just lost control of the process. And so there is now, again, a move underway in the state, and has been for some time, to once again get rid of the caucuses in favor of a primary system. At the very least, during the presidential years, if not completely. If Pawlenty succeeds in winning the battle on this front and ends up with a non-endorsement for Jeff Johnson, this is pretty much the death of the caucus system in the state of Minnesota, which I think is unfortunate because this is one of the few places where an individual can build an organization, take over their basic political unit, and move up to actually influence state and federal politics. Just think of a situation where someday a presidential candidate wins Minnesota and it puts them over the top. And just imagine that that one might be a Republican candidate. So to Republicans who say, we can't get anywhere, if the grassroots process can be allowed to work properly and there's enough people involved, it can be powerful. And it certainly has been that way on the Democrat side, and it could be that way on the Republican side. And it has been at different times in our history. You know, so they got rid of the primaries from the end of World War II, roughly, or I'm sorry, at the end of World War I, roughly up until 1922, when they reestablished this stuff. And I have to say, one of the things so-called conservative Minnesotans should do is spend a little time reading about the history of the state politically. Well, I've been talking about it, and this is this concept of trade protection, and there's lots of trade protection news in the news every day. Just talked about it on the last podcast, because the new president is a trade protectionist, and if you are manufacturing overseas, you've got to start hedging your bets, and that means looking for manufacturers in the U.S. Now, there are reasons to reshore production. Depot Star is one of them. They're in Minnesota. They do medical devices. They do aeronautic devices. They can also do standard manufacturing. Depot Star, D-E-P-O-T, Depot Star American Design, Engineering, and Manufacturing. Visit their website at DepotStar.com, D-E-P-O-T-S-T-A-R, DepotStar.com. So when we talk about the history of the state politically, for one thing, and this is very important because you'll often hear Republicans in the state tout their conservatism while at the same time lamenting the state's liberal governance. What's wrong with this state? These people are never going to change. Why can't we ever get anywhere in this state? Well, Minnesota has a long, proud history as a progressive state, and it really was fostered by Republicans, which were the power in this state in the early part of the 20th century. This is a state where they've always been all about education first. Education is a part of our state constitution. It's a place where business and government formed early foundation partnerships early on, which is one of the reasons I say that anywhere else, you know, state and government and business getting together is corruption. In Chicago, it's corruption. Here in, Minnesota, it's an approved, corruption is legal. I like to say that because this is a state that has a stable population. In a state in which German, Swedish, and Norwegian immigrants came in large numbers in the late 1800s, obviously Irish. These are all Europeans with a history of either monarchical governments or tyrannical governments or governments in which the Industrial Revolution came a little earlier, and unions and farmers fought for their rights. So they brought all that with them. But Minnesota is a state with a stable population, so the descendants of those German, Swedish, Norwegian, and dare I say New England and New York natives of the state are still around. And I feel that this progressive tradition is part of the DNA of Minnesota, politically at least, and maybe even literally. So to form what we might think of today as a very liberal base is actually progressive and even populist. And candidates on both sides tend to be moderate. And the candidates that do the best in Minnesota are candidates that push for reform and push for the little guy, hence the populist, the Democrat farm labor, etc. It's my analysis, by the way, but I think that the state that separates the most Republicans from Democrats in this state is their position on abortion and whether they are particularly religious. If you are a Protestant evangelical and against abortion, you're likely to vote Republican. But I am certainly, and I've heard it, and probably everyone has heard it, that often Republicans in this state will tout their conservatism while at the same time lamenting the state's liberal governance, and yet they will, they'll talk about light rail is a good thing, or they'll talk about funding for, baseball stadiums or football stadiums, or the schools. We've got to build a new school, or we've got to build a rec center. We got to have the government do this, that, or the other thing. And while Minnesotans have voted consistently for Democratic presidential candidates, they have generally voted consistently for slightly moderate and even progressive Republican gubernatorial candidates. And currently, the state House of Representatives in this state has a majority of Republicans, while Democrats and Republicans are evenly split in the Senate because the deciding vote became the lieutenant governor appointed by a Democrat, and she is a Republican. So this is when Al Franken resigned from the Senate and Tina Smith, the former lieutenant governor, took over that position. I maintain that Minnesota's Republicans aren't fire-breathing libertarians at all. When we talk about Ron Paul or even Donald Trump, what we are talking about is a populist appeal. And Ron Paul's anti-war appeal is one of the reasons that he did so well in this state. Donald Trump's originally kind of followed Ron Paul's footsteps in terms of being anti-war, but his whole jobs thing and he essentially ran as a friend of the little guy and as a reformer from outside, which goes big in Minnesota. And that's probably one of the reasons that people in this state still support Trump, not a majority, but surprisingly a number of people from the 8th District, which has voted Democrat for years, voted for Trump to be president. But state-oriented, run-of-the-mill Minnesotans who will just as soon vote to increase funding for education and stadiums for the Vikings as they are to support so-called free market reforms when it comes to national politics are very progressive when it comes to their own state. That is the political ground in this state. Obviously, regions of the state differ. The range has always been labor and progressive and agricultural oriented, but more industrial just because of the taconite mines and so forth. Although lately, it's got a very environmentalist cant to it, but it's always been labor Democrat up there. The south and southwestern parts of the state have always been farmers, agriculture. Minneapolis and St. Paul has been what you could refer to as the industrial center, but really Minneapolis and St. Paul began as financial centers, banking centers, and management centers. Minneapolis and St. Paul really is not industrial the way Detroit and Chicago and the Quad Cities and Milwaukee are and were. The south and southwestern parts of the state are its agriculture on a grand scale, on an industrial scale these days, and those people tend to be moderate or progressive because of their history as farmers. The far western middle part of the state, probably about the same. And of course, we also have large Indian reservations in the state, which can often determine the outcome in votes. As far as votes are concerned, the 5th District and the 4th District, which are Minneapolis and St. Paul, respectively, urban districts, generally, this is where most of the Democrat votes come from, and Duluth, St. Louis County. This is where most of the Democrat votes have historically come from. So the big issue at this convention is whether to support primaries as a method to pick gubernatorial candidates, or whether the convention itself should stand for the so-called grassroots process, endorse a candidate, and refuse to support former Governor Tim Pawlenty, who exempted himself from the process at the start and now blames the state party, or at least points to the state party as the reason for that. He's running because they don't have the resources, and so he's the guy that can get those resources. And we will see if that is actually the perception and the purpose of the convention once we get there. So that's kind of the plan for this thing. And Minnesota is not – so when we say things like conservative and liberal – and by the way, I touted those words on the radio for years, and I used to ask people what's a conservative, first as sort of a demand to vet their credentials, and second later because I don't think the word means anything in the state, and I don't think even liberal means anything in the state because this is a state of progressives. This is a state of populists, whether they know it or not. This is a state where reform appeals – and appeals to the common man and appeals to fix what's broken in St. Paul or Washington really carry over. Jesse Ventura as a governor is a perfect example of the kind of candidate that appealed to a populist core, and I think he had a real feel for that as a Minnesotan in understanding how to, you know, parlay his credentials as a famous wrestler and almost a cartoon character into being governor of the state. So it's, and people laughed at Minnesota for that, but, you know, he is no different from, you know, the old time Minnesota politicians that, you know, really knew how to play those chords. And so the really talented people, look at the most successful politicians in Minnesota. Hubert Humphrey was seen as the happy warrior. You know, Gene McCarthy was an anti-war candidate. You go all down the line, even the Republican governors that seems, you know, we say, well, they, you know, this guy was a Republican. Arne Carlson is a good example. This guy was a Republican. Arne Carlson was as moderate as it comes. And really what's interesting is you get situations where politicians like a guy named Tom Bach, who is a Democrat from the northern part of the state, just doesn't like Paul Thiessen, who is the speaker, you know, is the minority leader, used to be the Speaker of the House when the Democrats had the majority, because Thiessen is from the Twin Cities. And so they really don't see eye to eye on stuff. As I've said in many other podcasts, the 8th District is a place, and rural Minnesota is a place where gun control don't fly. And so you end up with education and improving roads and helping the farmer and, you know, that kind of stuff. That's what goes. So, pursuant to my plan to refuse to go on the highway, this is what I'm going. This is my trip map, and I don't have the map. I just wrote these down because I did it from Google Maps. I hate that, but I'll actually use a road map. But my plan is to go up 169 to 10 out of the Minneapolis and St. Paul Metro to State Road 65 to 27 to 65 to 210, and then across 210 to 35W to Big D, Duluth. And I want to do this because I want to go through some of those small towns on the way up and kind of meander around and kind of get a feel for this. This is such a large state that most people roll west on 94 or they roll north on 35 if they're going to the cabin. So if their cabin is on Mille Lacs, if their cabin is north of, you know, Eveleth or something, you know, one of my friends has a cabin north of Ely, and she said, you should come up, you know. So I left at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I left early. I think I left at about 10 or 11 in the morning, got to Duluth at like 2, 2:30. And I thought, well, I'm here. And then I went further up and it took me forever to get to Ely. And then I find out, I look at the map and I'm like, she is like 100 miles from Ely. And literally you could stand on the shore of Lake Superior, whatever that was that she has her cabin on, and look across to Canada. And it was a long-ass trip, let me tell you, a lot longer than I thought it was going to be, because this is such a gigantic state. So getting off the highway and getting onto the state roads is a fascinating experience in Minnesota. Not only, if you're going in the southwestern part of the state, do you go through places like Laverne, which are famous, you also go through these places which no one ever goes to or talks about in the state. And I think that's what's really fascinating about this state. In general, I would say Minnesota is a prosperous state with a pretty diverse economy these days. Lots of services. We are a medical insurance service state. Lots of banking, you know, and the farm part of our output, although less than 1% of the population is engaged in farming, I believe it's still one of the largest sectors of the state government. The state output. I don't want to edit this, so I'm just talking. But, you know, this is a prosperous state. 4.5 million people. It's growing. There's a lot of controversy about people leaving the state because of taxation and things like that. And as I was talking to somebody today, I said, well, maybe the tax situation is calibrated too high. But this is a place where people can get elected talking about marginal improvements and where Democrats and Republicans agree to raise more funds for education and for things like stadiums, which drives anti-government conservatives, so to speak. See, I think the anti-government person, the anarchist or the person that believes the government is just too powerful, such as myself, We're really not conservatives. We are as liberal as it gets. We're actually true progressives. The people who are really conservative are the people that are pushing for the status quo in the state, which is basically business as usual. And if you look across the state, it's not like the state is falling apart. It's not like the state is, you know, in dire straits. So I kind of want to point that out. There's a lot of people, especially Republicans, pointing to things in the state saying this is the travesty and this is terrible what they're doing in St. Paul and this is the worst thing ever. But I'm not sure that the residents of the state see it that way. So I'm going to be looking for that kind of rhetoric at the convention. If you're listening to this podcast and I talk to you, feel free to comment on it. And I'm going to be asking people a little bit about the history of Minnesota, because I'm not so sure a lot of these people really know that much about the history of the state in terms of its political orientation. So off to Duluth. All right, I'm going to be heading out to Duluth, and I appreciate donations for Mobile Podcast Command. That means diesel fuel as soon as I get rolling. Appreciate them coming in. All you have to do is look for that donate button at the top of the page, thebobdavispodcast.com. It's a big picture of Mobile Podcast Command at White Sands. It looked like snow, but it isn't. Also appreciate the likes and the shares on social media, including Facebook, Twitter, and, of course, my favorite, Instagram. And you can get the Bob Davis Podcast at Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, Google Play, as well as many more places. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts. Don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. For plumbing or heating problems or having them, check out stuff you can do now to keep your systems working when it gets cold again, when winter comes again. 651-224-4771 or 612-927-6488 in Minneapolis. So also, if you want to, check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. Thanks for listening to podcast 727, getting ready to go up to the political convention for the Republicans and planning on heading up to Duluth. Thanks for listening to podcast 727, the Bob Davis Podcasts.
Get up in the morning slaving for bread, sir, so that every mouth can be fed. Get up in the morning slaving for bread, sir, so that every mouth can be fed.
Oh, Israelite.
Wipe on my kids, step back up and I leave me. Darling, she said I was yours to receive. Up choices ago. I don't want to end up like Bonnie and Clyde.